And welcome to Grown in California, the Blue Diamond podcast, where we talk about all that is new and trending in the world of food and almonds. I'm Loretta Kelly, Director of Strategic Marketing.
And I'm CJ McClellan, the Senior Manager of Strategic Marketing. And today we are going to dive into the non-dairy category and what's driving its growth. And we'll also touch on how non-dairy products fit within the demand for sustainability and why that is on the rise. According to CO.NXT and Menu Matters, 80% of consumers say sustainability is important when deciding what food and beverages to purchase. In addition, Forbes found that 68% of highly empowered customers plan to step up their efforts to identify brands that reduce environmental impact. And last, according to the 2019 Eat Lancet Commission on Healthy Diets from Sustainable Food Systems, a global shift toward more plant-based foods would help feed the world's growing population on a nutritious and sustainable diet.
We're going to talk about non-dairy products and consumers' interest as that relates to sustainability and how non-dairy products can meet the current demand for sustainability. But, you know, before we get deep into the discussion about sustainability, let's introduce today's guests. We have a lot of experience on the line today. We have Dan Sonke. Please welcome him. He's our Director of Sustainability. And a warm welcome back to Lori Colleen, our Senior Technical Business Development Manager. Thank you two for talking.
Yes, welcome.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We're so excited to have you here. Let's keep things moving. So Dan, you know, as the Director of Sustainability, we would really love to hear from your perspective on sustainability and how it's really changed the food and beverage landscape. You know, in recent years, there's been a lot of talk around this particular topic. We really want to understand, what does it mean and how does this really result in increases in consumer demand?
So I've been involved with sustainability in food for about 20 years now, and it's been very interesting to watch the growth in consumer interest in sustainability. When I started, sustainability was more of a nice to have. It was a niche interest to consumers. And as we've watched the growth of sustainability as a trend, today it has gone mainstream. We see younger generations embracing sustainability and actually making purchase decisions around sustainability in ways that we didn't see a decade ago.
In the last podcast, we were talking to Luann Williams, who was from Innova Market Insights, and she was mentioning how health of the planet has really increased in the way consumers are perceiving it and where they're ranking it in the priorities of their life. And that is really trickling into the food and beverage industry as well. So why do you think there has been such a noticeable, measurable push for sustainable food and beverage products?
Well, it's very interesting to me. A lot of attention has been given to the younger generations, millennials, Gen Z, as drivers of this purchasing trend. And that's absolutely correct. But as a Gen Xer, I just have to chime in and say, let's give credit not only to Gen X, but also to the baby boomer generation. Because after all, the baby boomers invented Earth Day. They were a powerful movement that resulted in major environmental changes in this country. The Gen Xers, we came along behind them and we kind of revitalized Earth Day in the 90s. And yet you have to also acknowledge that when millennials came along, such a huge population, they had buying power. They have buying power that previous generations didn't have at their age. And we see the same thing happening now with Gen Z. And then, of course, social media, which we didn't have. And these things have all come together to drive sustainability as an awareness in ways that wasn't possible before, and an interest. And then you marry that with the buying power. We see these generations really driving intent to purchase around sustainability.
I think that's really cool. You talk about how with each generation, they put an evolutionary spin on what this really means. Do you have some examples of how the priorities have changed across the generations?
Well, I think very clearly what we see today is climate change is becoming the topic, the superseding topic. Everything starts with climate change, and we see companies really interested in documenting how they are reducing their impact on climate change and can drive progress towards a goal to reach net zero in their emissions 20 years down the road from now. So this is having huge impact that's trickling through the supply chain. The other big driver that we're seeing is biodiversity. People are hearing things like there's a great insect apocalypse happening where insect species are disappearing around the globe, being driven by changes in the landscape where there's fewer ecosystems for insects to live in. And you lose insects and you lose the fish that feed on them. You lose the birds that feed on them. And it just trickles through the environment. And so people have this concern, how do we enhance biodiversity? And are there ways that we can do it and reduce climate change at the same time? And at Blue Diamond, we're exploring ways that we think we can actually do that with our almond orchards.
Wow. I definitely get that, because I remember growing up, the big thing was like recycle, reduce, reuse, recycle. And now it is, the whole, we got to save the bees, that conversation is changing, and zero carbon emissions, that whole concept. So I definitely see that evolution and definitely understand it. Can you give some more examples about how Blue Diamond's working on that?
So almonds grow on trees. That's a fundamental thing that people have to realize. And trees in orchards, just like trees in forests, sequester carbon. And what does that mean? Well, we all know that photosynthesis involves taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. Plants take carbon dioxide in, they release oxygen. That's a fundamental thing we learned in elementary school. That carbon dioxide is being removed out of the atmosphere and then turned into substances that the plant lives on. And when you're talking about trees, one of the key substances is wood. As the tree grows, carbon accumulates in the form of wood through the rest of the life of the tree. So almond orchards live about 25 years usually. So for 25 years, the almond tree is taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and locking it into the form of wood. That's beneficial to the climate. So this makes almonds a low carbon food to start with, compared to many other fruits, nuts, and vegetables. The benefit can be enhanced even further if you do some additional practices. One of them is to not burn the trees at the end of the life of the orchard, and to chip the trees up and put them into the soil in the form of wood chips. And then that locks that carbon in the soil for an even longer period of time, lowering even further the impact of the orchards. So this is a great practice that we're exploring with our growers. Another practice where biodiversity comes in is to grow cover crops in between the rows of the trees. The cover crops enhance the health of the soil. On a smaller scale, they also lock carbon into the soil to impact climate beneficially. But if you choose the plants correctly, they also provide habitat and food for bees and other insects to enhance biodiversity and to promote bee health and pollinator health. So there's multiple benefits that come from this one cover cropping practice. And we're excited to explore ways to enhance that with our growers. We actually have programs that provide low or no cost seed for the growers to try these cover crops in their orchards for the first time, to take some of the risk out of them trying the practice, getting familiar with it, and then implementing it year to year thereafter.
It's so amazing, all the different aspects that go into this. And I know that sustainability is deeply ingrained in Blue Diamond and the work that we do every day, but I had no idea how many different facets to that there are, and that are happening just continuously and continually evolving. So it blows my mind regularly, all the things I hear.
I forgot to mention that it also helps to capture water when we have rain in the winter and lock that into the soil for the summer. So there's multiple benefits that come from cover cropping.
I love how sustainability starts at the orchard. And it's not just something that we just do with, how we bring the crop to the manufacturing plant for processing, or how we actually take it to market. It's really at the orchard. Do you have some examples of how we actually are improving or doing sustainable activities when we're manufacturing, and how that actually works in?
Absolutely. We're making a change in one of the energy systems at our largest factory this year. We think that will reduce carbon emissions about 10% across the whole company, just from that one change, 10% every year hereafter. So we're excited about that. We're also doing studies right now on how we transport nuts to customers around the world and seeing are there ways that we can make that more efficient to reduce our carbon footprint. Was on a call about that just today. So these are things that are ongoing, constantly being examined as we seek to improve our footprint.
And I hear we don't waste anything, do we? Like every piece, we actually figure out how to recycle it and reuse it in some other product.
That's so true. From the time the nut is growing in the orchard, a lot of people don't realize that almost 2-to-1, the tree is producing not just an almond, but the shell and the hull that go around the almond. And those are put to use in the livestock industry as a food source. So we're not letting it go to waste, but we're benefiting another agricultural industry. And then once the nuts come to us, we can put them into all sorts of uses. So if we have nuts that come and they get a little chipped and scratched along the way, they can be diced, or they can be made into almond flour, or they can be pressed for almond oil or almond butter, or made into almond milk. So we don't waste anything. And everything that we do, we try to extract the highest sustainability value from it, as well as the highest value for our farmers.
So I read something interesting, and it's kind of back on the generational thing, but that kind of the millennials and older, we were all the rebels without a cause, and how this Gen Z comes in and they're a rebel with a cause, and they very particularly pick like a cause, and they're willing to basically riot for that cause to make the change. But on the flip side of that, there's also this rise in like convenience foods and ready to eat, and I need to be able to grab and go at, which seems a little bit juxtaposed to this increased interest in sustainability. So what can, you know, producers or food manufacturers do to remain sustainable while still trying to innovate and capture those aspects of convenience or those aspects of let me grab and go and my food is ready to eat, just let's go?
Well, I'm always fascinated by this growth in convenience and snacking. I think we all have seen, those of us that have been in the industry, this rise of clean label, which signals sustainability to consumers, even if the science isn't necessarily there on what makes it sustainable. But clearly, consumers like convenient foods. They like clean labels, simple whole ingredients that they recognize, whole grains, nuts, fruits, vegetables. And this signals something to them on both the nutrition and the sustainability side. But then packaging is important. You know, something recyclable, compostable can also enhance the sustainability of the convenient product, but also signal sustainability if it's done right by giving eye appeal related to a sustainability claim.
That's really cool. I know I do a lot of traveling, so I'm the queen of convenience foods. You know, I want my particularly sealed package of like nuts and then another package of like chips and making sure I have all these things available to me at any point in time, just so that I can actually eat quickly on the plane or on the go. So I definitely understand that. When it comes to like packaging, what are some innovations that you think are popping up there that really drive sustainability? And what are some things that you think we as Blue Diamond have adopted from a packaging standpoint?
At Blue Diamond, we're embarking on a journey on packaging sustainability. We use a steel can today for our branded snack nuts, and that is a highly recyclable material. Steel cans are actually the most widely recycled material in packaging for food.
Oh, I did not know that.
However, it takes a lot of energy to do that. So if there are other forms of packaging that can improve that, we're interested in that. The pouches that are commonly used in snack nuts, it's a little bit more of a challenge to find a material that is recyclable for that, but we have active programs going on right now to find ways that we can enhance recyclability of those packages while still preserving the high quality that's essential for the consumer experience.
Because you have to protect the shelf life of all the products that are here, because if you have a lesser quality package and then, you know, your bread starts to stale or the snack nuts go bad or your snack goes bad, then you're just increasing food waste. So I imagine that it can be very challenging to find something that is a replacement for the old traditional packaging while still maintaining that quality.
The advantage of a lightweight pouch is it takes less energy and emits fewer greenhouse gases to transport that because it's lighter. The challenge is the food safety and the quality. I was given the opportunity to taste nuts that had been stored in a recyclable pouch, that unfortunately didn't maintain good quality and the nuts were stale. It was not a pleasant eating experience.
So kind of on that topic, when we're looking at packaging food waste, and you've touched on this a little bit or a lot throughout these, but when you look at some of those efficiencies and some of the best practices around encouraging sustainability, in your experience, how do they make a difference?
Well, let's pick packaging and food waste. Food waste, both because of poor packaging or food waste because consumers just decide to throw something out. I've spent most of my career working on sustainable agriculture programs because the science says agriculture has a big impact. And so making small changes in agriculture can have a big result. What gets frustrating is when you put all the energy into working on sustainability in agriculture, but then consumers throw away 20% of a product, which we know doesn't happen as much with almonds, but with a lot of foods, that's not an uncommon number. 20% food waste is a huge impact because you're wasting everything that happened to that food up till that moment. So if we could reduce food waste, we, in one fell swoop, have a huge environmental benefit.
Ultimately, there's these trade-offs that exist, right? And I think for every good intention that we have a huge trade-off that we need to figure out. How do we actually employ that? Especially as it comes to, I want high quality food. I want food that looks great and also tastes great. And so you're trying to balance the trade-off of like, yes, we want sustainable packaging, but at the same time, it's got to stay fresh, right? Yes, I want almonds that are perfectly round and no chips and scratches, but you know, that happens in the process of just basically picking an almond, right? So I think it's the trade-offs that we're willing to make. And I think really addressing that with consumers and customers is really the responsible way of talking about sustainability.
I couldn't agree more. In my work as a sustainability scientist, I see the trade-offs all the time. You know, to your point, packaging. If it doesn't keep the food fresh, consumers waste the food, which has a bigger impact than the packaging. Similarly, we see people who are very fixated on, you know, a nice glass jar instead of a plastic container. Well, that glass jar is heavier and bulkier. It takes more energy to transport it to the store and to the consumer. So it has a bigger greenhouse gas footprint, even though it's very recyclable. These trade-offs have to be represented to consumers. I happened to see a delivery package this week that came to my home in a plastic bag, reminding us that this plastic bag is lighter than our lightest cardboard box. And here's why that's important. And if you go to a link on the package, it takes you to a site that says, hey, it took less energy to get this to your house. And so you might like the cardboard box, but this is actually having a benefit.
I wish more packaging or more products would communicate it so clearly, because I think that you'd rally even more passion around the subject if some of those things were explained in better ways.
Yeah, of course, the holy grail is to pursue it all, get the lightweight exactly. And the recyclability. And that's where we are putting time and attention.
So we're going to take it into back into the non-dairy plant-based space and see how these kind of tie together. So how hand in hand are the pushes for sustainability and plant-based products?
Well, we know a lot of consumers are pursuing plant-based foods first for the nutritional or the perceived nutritional benefits. But data says close behind that is sustainability. And consumers are reading things again on social media or from other sources that say it takes 2 to 50 times more land to raise a pound of animal meat as opposed to the equivalent amount of protein that's plant-based. And then, you know, very quickly they realize that all the environmental impacts that come along with that. And so they are indeed connecting plant-based proteins to sustainability because of the impacts from the amount of feed that has to be grown on land to feed the animals. That doesn't mean there aren't ways to improve the sustainability of animal-based proteins, but it's a very simple switch in perception for the consumer to say, okay, I can affect this by buying plant-based proteins.
How do the non-dairy ingredients and non-dairy products then fit within kind of that umbrella that we're talking about of the plant-based and the sustainable products?
In dairy, similar to livestock production for meat, consumers are hearing about the amount of land it takes to grow the crops that are fed to dairy animals and the impacts that growing those crops have. They're also hearing about the climate change impact that comes from ruminant animals and their digestive systems and the disposal of the manure, which can have some significant greenhouse gas implications. And again, to be fair, the dairy industry is addressing these things, but it's almost always the case that a plant-based milk is going to have a better greenhouse gas footprint than these animal dairy milks.
So which non-dairy products do you feel are in high demand and why?
Well, almond milk has had a very high demand for a long time. It's a very, very popular plant-based milk, and it's the leading non-dairy option. Oat milk has had some recent growth, somewhat from sustainability claims, but we're starting to see some reputable investigations into some of those claims, and they're not standing up as much as the claimants might like. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal just this morning about oat milk and sustainability claims. And so we're seeing people starting to question that. And we think that almond milk has a really robust claim that can stand up to that.
You know, one of my other favorite non-dairy products is non-dairy ice cream. I love it. Actually, there's a place here in Sacramento that I like going to, Babes. Babes has great non-dairy ice cream and gluten-free donuts. But, you know, I think non-dairy ice cream is like, or non-dairy frozen desserts is just one of the best places.
That's the big one for me because lactose intolerant. So I've explored so many different kinds of plant-based ice cream or dairy-free ice creams. So it's like a curse. I was like cursed with this. It was like, we're going to make you love ice cream, but also make you lactose intolerant. So it's a really fun game for you. We are going to wrap it up, but I have one last question for you. Do you think the consumer focus on sustainability is long-term, or do you think it's just here for the short term?
I've been tracking the growth of sustainability interests for 20 years now. It is not going away. It is accelerating. It is mainstream. It is here to stay. And we see that not only in consumer interests, but other signals. We see government investment in climate change and agriculture. We see increased attention in the customers, the retailers, the restaurants, the leading chefs who are responsible for food trends. All signals point to this lasting a long, long time.
Is there anything, like a single message that you would love to share with customers about sustainability as it relates to Blue Diamond?
One story about Blue Diamond sustainability that sometimes is overlooked is the fact that we are a cooperative. We are owned by the farmers. Our reason for existence is to help them thrive. And we're the home of the small farmer in California, which is rare. So the average farm size of Blue Diamond is less than 100 acres of almonds. And little known fact, my family is a Blue Diamond member family. So I grew up on a Blue Diamond member farm.
It comes full circle.
We are helping to protect small farmers and keep them viable. Sustaining the small rural economy depends on there being small farms in large number. It just doesn't stay the same when you have a few large farms. It is a vital part of the social fabric that we want to sustain.
Well, thank you, Dan, for joining us today. We appreciated all of the awesome information and your time.
I always like to talk almond sustainability, so ask me anytime.
Joining us next is Lori, Blue Diamond Global Ingredients Senior Technical Business Development Manager. Lori, you've had a very broad and expansive knowledge of the formulation process and potential challenges that producers could run into when formulating a sustainable non-dairy product. How about you start by telling us a little bit about yourself before we start answering some questions?
Well, thank you, Loretta.
I joined Blue Diamond about a year and a half ago, but I have been in the food industry for over 25 years with extensive experience in all aspects of the industry, formulating anything from nutrition bars to beverages, you name it. I probably have done some formulating all those products in my past.
Thinking about non-dairy, what are some of the most common food and beverage applications that are using non-dairy ingredients today?
Non-dairy milks, creamers, protein shakes, cheese, yogurt, and butter alternatives, in addition to indulgent treats like non-dairy ice creams, cheesecakes, custards, and puddings. This upsurge stems from many drivers, including the avoidance of dairy due to allergens or lactose intolerance, vegetarian, vegan, and flexitarian diets and lifestyles, and concerns about sustainability, the environment, and animal welfare. And this upsurge is also giving conventional dairy products a run for their money and generating significant innovation in the space, as consumers are using all of their senses to build their eating experience. This is one of the main reasons why non-dairy alternatives must deliver similar taste and texture in addition to a nutrient content that is equivalent to their dairy counterparts.
We're seeing such a huge growth in that non-dairy category, especially in non-dairy formulations. Every time I go to the store, like the area is just expanding tremendously. Are you noticing specific categories that are especially popular?
Historically, non-dairy milks had been driving the market. However, non-dairy cheese, yogurt, desserts, and butter alternatives all appear to be part of the new frontier. As a matter of fact, I recently attended Natural Product Expo West in Anaheim, and I was amazed at the number of non-dairy alternatives that were showcased at the expo. Seeing and sampling these incredibly delicious products was an awesome experience for a foodie like me. The innovative non-dairy products range from decadent chocolate ganache frozen dessert and premium handcrafted smoked cheese wheels to more familiar products such as traditional yogurts, cream, feta, shredded and sliced cheese, and frozen dessert bars, cheesecakes, and non-dairy butter alternatives. I was extremely impressed by the improvements that have been achieved in the category in both taste and texture.
That sounds fantastic. I would love to sample all of those things. I would probably have a hard time stopping myself from eating all of them. So as two lactose intolerant folks, I know that we're always trying to find something that rivals our counterpart, like ice cream is one of my favorite things. As we look at non-dairy ingredients or non-dairy formulations and ingredients that go into them, what are some of the benefits that the ingredients can bring to these formulations?
It looks like the new generation of dairy alternatives is delivering the eating experience consumers expect, specifically by providing taste and texture that more closely mimics or replicates their dairy counterparts. Many of these ingredients have also improved their message to better connect with today's health and sustainability conscious consumers. And as Dan mentioned, clean label is very important. This means that formulators are trying to avoid long ingredient labels and possibly undesirable nutritional effects. Simple ingredients is one of the main goals in the dairy alternative space.
I hear exactly what you're saying, Lori. I've been lactose free for a long time, so I feel like I've tried everything in that non-dairy category, and like taste and texture are those critical components that like seem to be missing. I remember my first bout at non-dairy yogurt, and I'm like, what is this liquidy mess? And now, you know, there's a lot of great options out there. So what challenges do producers commonly face when formulating sustainable non-dairy products? And then how can they incorporate those wonderful, versatile, clean label ingredients like almond butter?
One main challenge when formulating non-dairy alternatives with plant-based ingredients is that dairy proteins have multiple functional properties which contribute and impact mouthfeel, texture, and flavor. Replicating these characteristics with plant-based systems can be difficult. However, non-dairy alternatives continue to evolve on improving the dairy-like thick, creamy texture and mouthfeel they provide. Plant-based cheese appears to be one of the most challenging applications. Many non-dairy cheese options already have the great taste, but they fall short on delivering the chew, the stretch, and the melt that is equivalent to dairy cheese. But there seems to be a light at the end of the tunnel, as there are several brands in the market of non-dairy soft, shredded, sliced, and block cheeses that are made with plant-based alternatives, such as almond ingredients, with some of these being very close to duplicating traditional dairy cheese characteristics.
It's so interesting. So not only is there this rise of the number of non-dairy alternatives that are on the market now, there's also a lot more ingredients that formulators can choose from. So what should formulators consider when choosing between different almond-based ingredients in order to produce a more sustainable non-dairy alternative product?
Almond ingredients, in addition to varying in nutritional content, also have different functional properties. For example, Blue Diamond Blanched Almond Butter is an excellent option for non-dairy-based formulations. It provides a rich, dairy-like creamy texture to most applications, as it contains about 50% fat in the form of almond oil. However, the almond oil content needs to be taken into consideration, as it may be a very important factor in determining the optimum amount of almond butter that may be used in different formulations. An almond ingredient that also works extremely well is Blue Diamond Almond Protein Powder. Since it has been partially defatted, it only contains 12% fat. This allows for the incorporation of other fats that may be optimal in dairy-free target applications, such as coconut oil. Additionally, almond protein powder has an off-white color and a neutral clean flavor with no off notes. It has excellent water-holding capacity and allows for better hydration, and provides the smooth, creamy mouthfeel that is typical to dairy products and delivers on the appearance, taste, and texture that consumers expect from their non-dairy options. In production of firm cheese, almond protein powder functions better than almond flour and almond butter. It incorporates more effectively with other ingredients and has excellent gelling properties that impact texture, contributing to the desired firm bite that is typical to a dairy cheese.
You know, I've tried a couple of those, and like there's really good spreadable ones, but when you try to get to the like ones with really good bite, sometimes it's hard to find a good option. When you think about that, are there any other added benefits consumers are looking for when it comes to non-dairy sustainable products, specifically when it comes to convenience goods?
Definitely. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought a new focus on the added benefits food and beverage options can offer, and has inspired more than half of global consumers to research ingredients that can boost their immune health. As a result, consumers are more selective about the products they purchase and often look for those that offer more than one nutritional benefit. New product innovation focused on immune benefit has grown an average of 16% annually from 2015 to 2019, and is expected to continue that path as companies further explore the link between immunity and digestive health. A holistic approach to health will also expand more opportunities to address the immune system via gut health, resulting in more innovation as consumers show a greater interest in fiber-rich foods as they look for natural, sustainable, and innovative options that can support their digestive and immune health.
Wow. You know, I think when I first started learning about the connection between digestive health and gut health and the immune system, like it like blew my mind that that was where the majority of your immune system is. What's the percentage? Do you guys know? What's the...
It's about 70 to 80% of your immune system actually resides in your digestive system.
That blows you away, right? Like, amazing fact, right? And so it's like, oh my gosh, like, really, what I am what I eat, right?
Exactly.
So I think one of the things that we should do is maybe ask you about some things that you've noticed and the shift in food and beverage consumer demands that focus on sustainability.
One macro trend that we've seen gaining massive traction is health of the planet, which is where we are seeing the environmental and sustainability interest from consumers. This is contributing to the rise in demand for plant-based and non-dairy foods and beverages. Transparent sustainability for this is essential.
I think I'm seeing more around planet-based diets, not just plant-based diets, you know. Not only is this food plant-based, but is it good for the environment? Is it made in the right way? So I think that's going to be a big trend coming up in the future. But we'll see, you know, wait till our 2023 trend podcast to find out, right?
Well, Lori, thank you so much for joining us today. It is always a pleasure to have you on the podcast and to pump you for all of your amazing knowledge and genius.
Well, thank you once again for having me. I look forward to hopefully joining you again in the future.
Thanks, Lori. Well, if you're hungry for more insights, in the meantime, head to our website at bdingredients.com/insights to learn all about the latest developments in food and beverage innovation. Isn't that right, CJ?
Yes, and if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe to our show and leave us a review. But until next time, thanks for listening.